On Tech News Today, Congress moves to legalize phone unlocking, sort of. The personal data for 360 million people is now for sale online. And Motorola reveals their plans for phones and smartwatches. All that and more coming up next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
It's Wednesday, February 26th, 2014, and this is Tech News Today. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT2. And by ShareFile, enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile by Citrix. Try ShareFile today. For a free 30-day trial, go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
And I'm Jason Hell.
Tech News Today explores the most important stories of the day in conversation with the world's leading journalists. Our guest today and co-anchor this week is Natalie Morris, a contributor to The Today Show, CNBC, Queen Latifah Show, and she's a former anchor for CNET TV. She's also the co-founder of ReadQuick, a speed reading app for iOS, and she's joining us from New York City as she's trying to survive the transit from New York City to New Jersey, and she's coming in by phone. Welcome, Natalie.
Thank you very much. Yeah, don't get me started about snow and public transportation, but I'm here. Don't think I'm going to be easier on anyone today just because I'm on the mobile.
All right. You're all of you interview guests, you've been put on notice. Natalie is coming after you. Well, let's get to the news. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill yesterday that legalizes the unlocking of phones for customers who are switching carriers, but only for individuals. At the last minute, the bill was changed to keep a ban on bulk unlocking. Jeff John Roberts writes for GigaOM on legal issues related to the digital economy, and he's here with us today to explain all this. Welcome, Jeff.
I'm Mike. Good to be here.
Now, unlocking advocates were supporting this bill until it was changed at the very last minute. Who changed it, and why did they change it?
People are screaming about a bait and switch that looks like it was put into effect by the big phone carriers. Well, not directly, of course. It was Bob Goodlatte, senior figure in the House, did the switch at the last minute and took a lot of people by surprise. What it means is it sort of it spoils the what people were envisioning, which was basically to ensure that other companies' device makers can't use copyright law as a means to restrict what people can and can't do with their gadgets. But the reinsertion of this provision for bulk unlocking appears to open the door for that. And for consumers, it could be a bad deal because it'll make it harder to unlock your phone in the future.
And that's really the weird thing about all this is that the unlocking provision was based on copyright law, as you said, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And so what advocates were, just to summarize what you're saying, advocates were hoping that whole concept of using copyright to prevent you from switching carriers and keeping your phone would be invalidated. But they didn't do that. They simply legalized it, essentially, for individuals, but they didn't break the chain between using copyright and switching carriers. Is that correct?
Yeah, you nailed it. You summed that up very well. And this seems to be sort of the long game, is at a time when there's a lot of demand to switch carriers, and T-Mobile especially is disrupting the market. Copyright law is a sort of good backdoor for them to kind of put the screw to people that make it easier, especially those little stores you see in many cities that allow you to go in and unlock your phone. If the phone carriers can crack down on those people, that means they'll be able to sort of hold on to a fair amount of control. So in theory, it upsets people because copyright law isn't supposed to do this. The purpose of it, the law in question, is it makes it a criminal offense to sort of hack files or to break digital rights management. And that was envisioned for people who wanted to get around, you know, downloading movies and songs, taking it into the realm of devices like phones or garage door openers or anything else is not what the law is supposed to do. And that's why a lot of people are upset about this.
Now, it seems to me that, and I've always wondered about this, because it seems to me that the whole unlocking issue, whether you're allowed as a consumer to unlock your phone, take that phone to another carrier, that seems to be something that should live within the realm of violating or not violating the carrier's kind of user agreement. Whereas this copyright, tying it to copyright, makes it a crime to do that. Is that your understanding of this as well? I mean, is this part of what is objectionable about this ad, about this thing to some people, that it makes it a crime rather than simple violation of the user agreement?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of hyperbole goes around in the tech press. It's like, oh my God, you can go to jail for unlocking your phone. I mean, realistically, no one's going to go to jail. No one's going to be fined. It's just more the notion that this copyright law can be used as a weapon in this way is regarded as unhealthy. And I think that's what people are upset about.
And I think the general consumer is still afraid that if they unlock their phone, they nullify the warranty on that phone. And I don't think the carriers give any indication that they're going to give that up. The terms of your contract will still be just as ironclad. Am I right?
That's what really irks me. I've had this experience personally when I switched from AT&T to T-Mobile. I regard my phone as my property. I paid for it. So the idea of using, sort of subtle contract agreements or warranties or anything to interfere with my property, I find quite upsetting. If I'm still paying for the phone through a subsidy and a contract, that's fair game because whoever sold it to me still has a property interest in my phone. But once the device is mine free and clear, I don't think that carriers should be able to sort of tamper with my phone. This resulted in me losing service for a week, and which is obviously very inconvenient. And I just don't see how it's justified in law or policy. I know Wheeler at the FCC basically warned the carriers saying, stop doing this or we're going to come in and regulate. But for now, there's still a fair amount of room for mischief.
And most of the, voices I see about this on international social networking anyway, say that this is a pretty uniquely American phenomenon. It doesn't happen overseas as much. Do you know anything about that?
I'm not an authority on that, but I know the way American carriers sell phones is sort of distinct. In other countries, generally, you buy your phone and you buy your plan. In America, the idea of subsidized phones, it's like, here, have an iPhone for $100 or $200 and take the two-year contract, is a particularly or uniquely American distribution model. And that, in one sense, I think probably trains people that all these conditions come whenever you have a phone. I think other places would simply regard, this is my phone, I can do what I want with it. So I think that's perhaps good insight you made. It might be a uniquely American problem.
Now, Jeff, this is not a law yet. This is a bill that passed the House and now it goes to the Senate. But there are alternative bills also potentially coming through the House, right?
Yeah, I mean, this gets pretty inside baseball, in the weeds sort of stuff. But if you can look at it this way, what's just happened? Goodlatte has teed it up so that other bills can come in for other amendments. Or else it's simply what this law says is the law says we want to make clear that you can unlock your phone. However, this doesn't mean that this is necessarily true for bulk unlockers. So what might happen is in the process of copyright review, that's the other part of the game. You're looking at the longer term strategy. Congress is also reviewing all the copyright laws. So what I expect is going on is that you're going to see a hammer provision come in being tucked into the revised copyright law. And then they're going to invoke this law as proof that this is what Congress wanted to do. So I think that's sort of the great game. Nothing's going to change on the ground very much, but it seems the larger strategy is the carriers who have huge clout in Congress have set it up so they'll be able to sort of squeeze the unlocking shops and preserve a fair degree of control over how we use our devices.
Well, it's the American way. Thank you for coming on and explaining all that for us, Jeff.
My pleasure. Thanks.
You can find Jeff on GigaOhm.com and also on Twitter at Jeff John Roberts. Well, in a second, I'm going to tell you about a huge cache of user data now being sold on the black markets on the internet. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy for you to create your own professional website or online portfolio, and they're one of our sponsors today. Now, Squarespace is awesome because you can build your own website, and it doesn't look like a website built from scratch because you start with 25 beautiful templates. So you go in there, choose a template, and then you can modify it to create a custom website all your own. This is completely professional looking, so you can use it for your business, no matter how large your business is, for your photography portfolio, any kind of thing you'd like to build, even a blog. And no matter what you do, it's going to look beautiful because Squarespace has really, really brilliant designers. It's also incredibly easy to use. They have live chat and email support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I've used this support and it's very, very good. Plus, there's a completely redesigned customer help site to make it easier to get instruction and guidance about how to build a better website. So it's a fantastic site, and it seems like it would be super expensive, but it's not. It starts at only $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a whole year. Squarespace is also mobile ready. And what does that mean? Well, for starters, they have a metric app for iPhone and iPad that lets you check site stats like page views, unique visitors, and social media follows. They'll have a mobile blog app where you can monitor your site and moderate comments on your blog. So that's a fantastic service. Also, simply building a Squarespace website makes your site look brilliant on mobile devices, even on very small screen devices, on iPhones, on Android devices, on tablets. It's going to look great on every single one because it's automatically reformatted for the mobile devices. They've also got a new ad. If you want to check that out, go to blog.squarespace.com. This ad hit the internet yesterday or maybe the day before, and they talk about the importance of the little details when you're building a website, and Squarespace makes those little details right automatically. So you want to check out that ad, check out Squarespace, and again, you can start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required. You can start building your website today. When you decide to go with Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT2 for the month of February, and that'll get you 10% off and also show your support for Tech News Today. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. And remember, a better website awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. Well, a security company said yesterday that it discovered a hoard of stolen credentials from about 360 million user accounts being sold on the online black markets. The find by Hold Security was first reported by Jim Finkel of the Reuters news agency, who's with us this morning to tell us what happened. Welcome, Jim.
Sure.
So, Jim, do we know where this data was stolen from?
No. Hold Security got this data. They won't tell us exactly where because they want to preserve their ability to get this type of data in the future, but somewhere in the criminal underground, and it's just a hoard of credentials. It's unclear from these credentials where they were taken, and they're trying to figure that out right now.
Well, do we at least know if the data came from hacks that have already been reported in the press, or are we looking at the evidence of hacks that haven't yet been reported?
Holt is pretty certain that they're from hacks that have not been reported in the press.
Wow. So we could be looking at additional news reports coming out pretty soon of another or several, apparently, new target-like hacks where consumer data has essentially been stolen. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. So Target, in the hack where there were 40 million credit cards and then another 70 million pieces of data, in this case, they're talking about 360 million pieces. There was one hoard that was like 150 million pieces. So that would be twice the size of the Target breach.
So Curtis,
and these are email addresses. And the part that I found the most disturbing was unencrypted passwords that go with these email accounts. So why are unencrypted lists even floating around like this?
Well, I mean, it's the same story over and over again, which is companies that we trust do a lousy job of protecting our information. We don't know who these companies are at this point, but, it's pretty disturbing.
Now, how much do we know about what kind of data it is? We know there are passwords both encrypted and unencrypted. What other kind of data? Is there potentially credit card numbers, that sort of thing?
No. All we know is that these are credentials to access websites, we believe, or some kind of computer system. So, it's potentially, I don't want to say what kind of website because I just don't know. I mean, there was a big breach at, a dating website. It could be a dating website. It could be a gaming website. It could be a bank. It could be something taken from a realtor. Retailer, but it wouldn't be fair to say it's any of those. It's just those are types of breaches that have occurred in the past. The Adobe breach, there were tens of millions of credentials stolen. It's something on the size of that. And again, that was one of them. There were several different attacks that Hold Security has identified in the past 3 weeks. This is a company, basically what they do is they go around and search criminal forums looking for data. They find it and they tell their customers when their data has been stolen. That's sort of their business model, and that's how they uncovered this stuff.
Now, Curtis B. in the chat room is asking if it all came from one source or multiple sources. I know from your article that it came from multiple sources. So just to make that clear, this is from multiple sources. One of them is very large, but we don't know exactly how big the other ones are. Now, another question I have for you is, you know, you mentioned these sort of online black markets where this data is for sale. What are these sites? Are these like kind of criminal underground site? Like, where do you go to buy 360 million login credentials?
These are places where criminals who establish some level of trust with each other go. It's not a site that you or I could easily get access to. It is hopefully a site where undercover law enforcement officers do have access, and they're pursuing this. Alex Holden of Hold Security does have access to these kinds of sites, and there are other people engaged in the same type of business who do as well.
Well, Jim, I want to thank you for coming on the show and explaining all this.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks again. You can find Jim's work at Reuters.com and also on Twitter at TechWriterJim. Thanks again. Well, Motorola didn't unveil anything at Mobile World Congress, sadly, but in a press conference yesterday, they revealed some of their plans for this year. Devendra Hardawar is a senior editor and lead mobile writer for VentureBeat, and he joins us to explain what Motorola said yesterday. Welcome.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
So what did Motorola tell us about their plans for the Moto X this year?
I was looking more at the Motorola smartwatch news. Was there anything particular you want to bring up around the Moto X?
Well, I
mostly saw the people talking about the wearable news. Everybody else said the press conference was kind of boring, surprisingly.
Yes, it was pretty boring information. If I recall, I think, you know, because we did a special report on this yesterday, I believe that they said they'd have a new Moto X by the summer. They're expanding the Moto Maker program to Mexico and Europe. They said it's coming
countries.
To India and Australia, things like that. It wasn't super, you know, knock you over kind of news. And you're right. The really exciting news was the wearable news. Mm-hmm. And they said they'd be coming out with a smartwatch this year, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the plan. And what's really funny is that Motorola, you know, in 2011 released the Moto Active, which was technically a smartwatch, but it was really slow and really clunky and was reviewed horribly. So it's kind of funny, kind of ironic to see them kind of come back and do this now when smartwatches are finally a thing. But, you know, I kind of have some faith in them. They've always been great with hardware. And actually just today, some news got leaked out that, images of a prototype from last year, which looks like a very basic kind of smartwatch. It looks very similar to the Pebble. Hopefully Motorola, you know, as part of Lenovo now, hopefully they'll be better with designs. Hopefully they'll be able to create something new and shiny. I did see that Moto X news, but yeah, it was just so boring. It was just so dull. And it's a shame too, because I like that phone.
What I find so comical about the language in their talk was that they want their wearable to address a big problem, which is that wearables are too ugly and they should be like jewelry. Yep. And I thought, oh my gosh, only in the first world is that a big problem, that your wearables are not jeweled enough.
It's true. It's definitely a first world problem, although I feel like the entire wearables category is, you know, capital letters, first world problem, because, you know, it is really an accessory category. It's not something people will necessarily need. It seems more of something coming out of a desire from companies like, you know, Google and other hardware makers who aren't maybe selling as many smartphones as they used to. It's more of a desire to sell more hardware, basically. But yeah, they actually do. Motorola isn't wrong. They do need to be pretty. They do need to be attractive, because this is technology that you're going to have on your body. And that's a really big difference. You know, it's just like, you know, the iPhone's design is one of the many things that helped the iPhone, that helped smartphones become successful. We had Windows phones before, we had Blackberries, we had the Palm Trio. But there is a certain, you know, there's a certain truth to that. Design does help technology become more accepted to the public. And hopefully, you know, we'll get to a point this year where wearables actually look attractive. I was at the Samsung event here in New York, and they showed off the Samsung Galaxy, or no, the Gear Fit, which is this gorgeous little wearable wristwatch. I want more stuff like that.
But the thing thing was, when Steve Jobs introduced the iPad, he told us there's a space between phone and laptop that we need to bridge, and we all totally bought that, right? So we aren't all bought in yet to that, like, where is the space here? Because we've got the continuum. We see phone, tablet, laptop, but where do we insert that? And, you know, is the key that it has to be beautiful? I'm still scratching my head about it.
I mean, I think there is something, the idea that we're actually going to be wearing this stuff, I think, is important, because I know a lot of people who won't be wearing, you know, big clunky wristwatches just because it has some, maybe some notification feature from their smartphone. But right now we are seeing devices like the Jawbone Up and the Nike Fuel Band, things I really love. And these are great wearable devices. We're going to see some sort of convergence there between these great attractive devices that can track our health and offer so much for us, and something that basically functions as a smartwatch too. Ultimately, those two product lines will converge, and that'll be like the ultimate wearable wristband.
Now, Devendra, I was really excited about this news yesterday for two reasons. First of all, the best thing about the Moto X, and I'm a Moto X fan myself, is the X8 processor and the, you know, the low power mode for contextual awareness. It does all kinds of magic things, and that's really what separates the Moto X from all the other phones on the market. And an engineer from Motorola told me that all of that technology was developed by their smartwatch division, not by the phone division. So they essentially took this technology from the smartwatch and they put it in the Moto X, and it turned the Moto X into a rock star phone. And so I've got to think that they've got some great technology for smartwatches as well. So that was exciting. The other thing is that they said that they would have wearables, plural, coming out this year. What do you make of that?
I mean, it could just be a slip of the language or something, but I wouldn't be surprised if Motorola had more than one smartwatch, maybe a smartwatch and some sort of fitness tracker, because that's basically what we see Samsung did. You know, they introduced the new Gear 2 devices, but then the Gear Fit is there too. These companies are clearly experimenting right now, and Motorola doesn't really have a good fitness gadget, which I think, you know, more people may actually want rather than a smartwatch. So we're going to see these companies play, you know, the entire field, see what works. But my vision, hopefully, the thing I really want to see is a great wearable device, you know, that has a good display, that interfaces with my phone, that can track my health, and, you know, can kind of blend in, too. Think of the great earpieces from the movie Her. That technology disappeared into the movie and into those people's lives. So I'd love to see something like that, you know, on our wrists.
Yeah.
But you're really limited to the human body if you think about, like, other places on the body. We've already got the head covered. We got the wrist covered. We got, I don't know, where else can we put something?
Well,
like
then we start talking about embedded, gadgets within our bodies, and it gets all, it gets really sci-fi at that point.
Well, thank you for coming on and explaining all that, Devendra. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You can find Devendra at VentureBeat.com and also on Twitter at Devendra. Well, out of the box, Google Glass isn't much of an augmented reality device. That would require a glassware app that can recognize objects and tell you about them in real time. But it turns out a startup called Blipr has created such an app, and they've unveiled it today. Alice Truong is Fast Company's West Coast correspondent and a contributor to USA Today, and she's here to tell us about Blipr. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Am I pronouncing that right, Blipr?
Blipr.
All right.
That works too.
almost close. So what is Blipr and how does it work?
So in case you haven't been aware, there's this augmented reality layer that exists basically on a lot of like consumer products, including, I've also seen it in like Turkish newspapers, glossy magazines, Coke and Pepsi cans, like a Wheaties box, where, you know, you scan an object with this app. It's been residing in a mobile phone so far. And, you know, from that Wheaties box, somebody like an athlete might be coming out charging at you. So there's like this layer of augmented reality. And one of the things that have kind of, you know, stood in the way of this becoming more mainstream has been the fact that you need to, you know, whip out your smartphone, you have to unlock it, launch the standalone app, and then scan your product. So with the Google Glass app, the hope is that this kind of makes the entire experience look more frictionless, sort of bringing augmented reality closer to reality.
Interesting. Now, one of the interesting things about Blipr is that it recognizes hand gestures. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I actually haven't seen a demo of the video. I chatted with the CEO yesterday, and they were whipping up, putting together a video, but it wasn't made available yet. But yeah, they're, you know, voice commands, hand gestures. ways for you to, I guess, more seamlessly summon this interactive content out of the the billboard or the magazine or like the Wheaties box that you have.
Now, there seems to be a marketing component to this. For example, I believe Pepsi is using the platform. How are they doing that?
So Pepsi has used it for a couple of campaigns. For instance, there was one with Applebee's where consumers, you know, just while waiting for their food, were playing with an augmented reality game on the table. And most recently, they in the U.S., they launched a Super Bowl campaign where, you know, in order to get the fans to engage and also, like, lure them with the possibility of winning tickets, you know, fans were encouraged to download this app and engage with the can itself. And what was pretty interesting is that, you know, a very significant portion of the can's real estate, like an entire back panel, was dedicated to teaching users how what Blipper is and how to use it. So it has, like, very clear-cut directions, like download this, launch it, scan it. It's not entirely complicated, but you could see how something that already exists, like, for instance, that Heinz bottle that we have, there's a lot of kind of, like, lack of awareness around it. So this hopes to kind of, like, defeat the problem, like, solve the problem that QR codes had. There's a lot of similarity in the interaction, right, taking out your phone and scanning. And so they're hoping that by using brands to educate their consumers that this would become something more widely adopted.
Interesting. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and explaining Blipper to us. And as a glass user myself, I'll look forward to augmenting my own reality.
Yeah, it's going to come out in 3 weeks for explorers to check out.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again.
Thank you.
You can find Alice at alicetrong.com and on Twitter at alicetrong. And let me spell her last name, T-R-U-O-N-G. All right. Well, very quickly, President Barack Obama has four options for fixing the National Security Agency phone surveillance mess, according to a new report in The Wall Street Journal. The president asked intelligence agencies and the Attorney General to present options to him for how to bring more oversight to the NSA's phone surveillance program. The deadline was in March, but they presented those options way ahead of schedule. The options appear to be, first of all, the White House lawyers say he can just scrap the program altogether. Interesting option. He can order the metadata that's being collected to be stored by the phone companies. Phone companies don't want that. He can move it to another government agency like the FBI. They haven't said whether they want that or not. Or he can move it to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, and they definitely don't want it. So nobody wants this data. It's a hot potato. Nobody wants to grab onto it. Natalie, what do you think about this? Do you have any guesses about which option President Obama is going to select?
No, but I do think it's a lot of puppetry. I don't want to get too political about it, but I do think these are not brand new options. It's not like he was like, huh, this is the problem. I need someone to give me these. These are options he already knew now. So, yeah, I think a hot potato is a really great analogy for that. I just find it a little bit passing of the buck, and that makes me upset about it.
Well, we'll be watching the story as it unfolds, and I'm sure that whatever he does, nobody will like it. Well, I'm going to tell you about a new version of the Galaxy S5 that's not really made by Samsung. But first, I want to tell you about ShareFile. ShareFile is an incredibly great site. We talk a lot about every episode on Tech News Today. We're talking about major hacks where people are stealing information, stealing content, and companies are being irresponsible. People are being hacked all over the place. Well, ShareFile is a way for you to share files, even enormous files, online, on the internet, without getting hacked, without getting your information stolen. You know, people talk about security, but who's doing something about it? This is your chance to do something about it. Now, my wife has been doing our taxes and working with our accountant who's down south in Silicon Valley. And she's been using ShareFile to send our tax information. This is really, really important financial information that we do not want anybody else to see except our accountant. And when she's using this, essentially what she does is she uses ShareFile, uploads the file to the ShareFile site, and then they automatically send an email link. Now, you have to be the recipient in order to open the link and download the file. Once they've downloaded the file, the sender is notified. So my wife loves that. She also discovered a feature that she really, really likes, which is that you can set the number of times that it's possible for a file to be downloaded. You can say, okay, this can only be downloaded once. After it's been downloaded once, it can't be downloaded by anyone, not even the recipient. So that's a really great extra layer of security for ShareFile. So if you have important files If you have large files in multiple gigabytes of size, or if you have any file, you should use this to never just attach a document to email and send it. That's like putting it out over the open internet. Share file is the way to send files securely every single time. Again, you can control who has access to your files. You can set the level of permissions they have. It syncs automatically, so you and your team, if you're using this for business, will always have the most updated material. And you can access ShareFile from anywhere, a laptop, tablet, smartphone, anywhere. Of course, everything's got to be mobile these days because we live in a mobile world. So I want you to try ShareFile with my special offer. Sign up for today and receive a 30-day free trial with no obligation. Go to ShareFile.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and enter TNT. And remember, visit ShareFile.com, type in TNT, and protect your files. Well, one of China's major copycat companies is called Gufone, and they're already promoting a ripoff counterfeit of the Galaxy S5 just 2 days after Samsung itself unveiled the product. They stole the model name, too. Their phone is called the Gufone S5. It has mediocre specs and a low price, just $300. What do you think, Natalie? Is $300 worth it for a copycat ripoff Galaxy S5?
Sure, if you don't value your private parts and you don't mind a battery exploding in your pants.
Yeah, this is fascinating. Usually, Apple's the major target for this kind of thing, but you have to give them some street cred here. 2 days to copy a smartphone—that is pretty impressive. Well, Natalie, I want to thank you for phoning in on this one. I really appreciate it. You're a trooper. It must be difficult slogging across the greater New York area in the snow.
I wanted to be clear. I wasn't trying to phone it in, but I did.
Yes.
Important distinction.
Not a reference to the quality of your participation. So I thank you.
Certainly that's not a grade for effort, but yes, I still did very much enjoy the conversation, and you'll be able to see my face tomorrow if you guys want to. Do that.
Wonderful. And of course, Natalie Morris is with us all week as our guest co-anchor. You can find her at nataliemorris.com and also on Twitter at Natalie Morris. Well, please subscribe to Tech News Today at twit.tv/TNT. Also, send your news tips to our email address at tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW and leave a message. Also, post and upvote your favorite stories on our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com and find the rest of our social pages by searching for Tech News Today on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and YouTube. Make sure you tune into our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific. My name is Mike Gilgan, and I thank you for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.